Still in Job 31.
2.
No, Job 31, because we were discussing the issue of prosecutor adversary. And we were going to review that when we got together again. So, yes, we were.
I don't see your notes there saying that.
It just bugged you enough that you had to look it up.
No. It hinges, I think it hinges on understanding the word prosecutor. Unfortunately, it's translated prosecutor. I think it should be translated adversary.
Yeah.
Some English versions translated adversary. And if we take it as adversary and take it as the adversaries are his three friends out there on a dunghill, he's responding to them.
Oh.
And as Judy observed, he's defending himself and he's making himself look like he's A-okay and they were a mess. So if we come back to that, okay, and he appeals, where are we? In verse 34, because I feared the great multitude and and dreaded the contempt of families, so that I kept silence and did not go out of the door. Oh, that I had one to hear me, here is my mark. Oh, that the Almighty would answer me, for my adversaries had written a book. Okay, you remember all his adversaries? They all had one theme, basically. What was the theme? You are suffering because you sinned. Okay, that's the one theme. All right, so he has spent some time here defending himself, and he believes that God would be his witness. And if the adversaries had written a book, he'd carry it on his shoulder and bind it to me like a crown, because as he has observed through, what is it, chapters 29, 30, and 31, he has made a fairly good defense for himself. Okay, he did. He warred against being sexually loose. He warred against speaking falsehood. He was faithful to his wife, and he didn't do fraud, and he was nice to the poor, and he did all these things. And now he's saying that, you know, my adversaries can say what they like, and I would can still defend myself. And as you recall, Judy made the comment that he's proud. He's defending himself. And as I have observed with you many times in the last chapter, who repents in dust and ashes, and if you look at the whole argument and how he defends himself, it's easy to see why he repents. Okay? He defends himself. And it's one of the problems that we all have. We self-justify ourselves. Okay? Somebody comes and one of the things I try to have learned is, I don't know if you remember, David was going out of Jerusalem, and there was one of Saul's men running along the ridge, cursing David and throwing stones at David. And one of David's men wanted to go and do him in. And David said, no, God told him to say these things. And that is a very good thing to remember, that everybody who says anything to you, that those words have to go through God's sieve. And so David understood that. And it's something that probably Job didn't learn or needed to learn. But just so you... Where am I? Second Samuel. Second Samuel 16, verses 8 and following. Eileen, why don't you read Second Samuel 16, 5 through 10.
Okay. Now, when King David came to Bahurim, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera, coming from there. He came out cursing continually as he came, and he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. Also Shimei said thus when he cursed, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom your son. Now you are caught in your own evil, because you are a bloodthirsty man. And Abishai the son of Zeruiah said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Please let me go and take care of his head. But the king said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, curse David. Who then shall say, why have you done so?
Okay, so David recognized something that we all need to recognize. Okay. There is no word that anybody can say that doesn't first go through God's sieve. And when somebody says something to you, it's best for us to not necessarily respond, but to listen and to evaluate whether, in fact, this is something we need to hear. And David, this man was cursing him, throwing stones, and the king understood that, quote, the Lord has said to him, curse David. That is something that needs to be learned, and that's where David could have defended himself. He didn't. Job has not learned this. Job instead defends himself, and he heads down the road of self-justification, and that's not the way to do things. And it's a lesson that Job has to learn, and it's a lesson that we have to learn.
I have a question.
Sure.
So if somebody uses foul language or swears, I should just not say anything?
If they say it at me, that's the key. If they say
they
it
just
at me.
Said it because they're using foul language.
Well, that's we don't know exactly what Abishai said, but he quote cursed David. And so if somebody just uses foul language and not cursing me, that's one thing. But if they're cursing me, that's quite another thing. And if you'll notice that Jesus, when he was cursed and spat upon, etc., did not open his mouth. And that is the key to what's going on with David. We need to understand that the world hates us. And the world, because it hates us, will abuse us. And one of the things that we as Americans are going to be looking at soon, and I'm painfully aware of it now that I have two small grandchildren, that it's legal right now for the state to kidnap your child. It's legal. The child belongs to the state as far as the state is concerned. And there may come a time when you and I are objects of hate and we are hauled off to be executed, and they'll be hauling us off because they hate Christ, but that's not the reason they will give. They'll give it because I abuse my child. If you use God's discipline according to what God has said you should do to discipline your child, the world calls it child abuse. And if the world thinks that you are abusing your child, they will take your child from you, and you have no recourse. And we have to understand that. That's the risk when we apply God's principles in our home, in the school, or wherever we are, the world is going to respond negatively. And so I need to recognize that. And that's why I said, David, if you read the record, okay, with respect to his son Absalom, Absalom was a rebellious son who took over his kingship, and David wept over Absalom. And when one of his generals killed Absalom, David was angry. Absalom was never regarded as a rebel in David's eyes. And when he was fleeing Jerusalem, he was fleeing Jerusalem because Absalom was being a problem. And so this man comes out, and he's a remnant of the family of Saul, and Saul's family were angry about what happened to Saul and Jonathan, and this man is cursing David. And David understands that, quote, the Lord has said to him, curse David. This is a pointed attack. It's not just some random guy running around blaspheming God and cursing. He's attacking David. And it's really ultimately no different than Christ Jesus being abused verbally and physically, and quote, he opened not his mouth. It's no different. And so, as I've said before, the Old Testament is a shadow of the reality. And here is a shadow of the reality of the abuse that Christ took. And he took it for you and for me. And David understands that this is the sieve in which this man is speaking. It's the sieve of God's providence. It's the sieve of God's sovereignty. God has, quote, told this man to curse David. And then he continues, okay, this is what he says to Abishai. Okay, David said to Abishai and all his servants, see how my son, who came from my own body, seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite. Okay, his son is seeking his life, and David acknowledges that this Benjaminite has more reason to. Let him alone and let him curse, for so the Lord has ordered him. It may be that the Lord will look on my affliction and the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing this day. David has learned something else that we need to learn. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. And that's something Job needed to learn. And David continues. And as David and his men went along the road, Shimei went along the hillside opposite him and cursed as he went, threw stones at him, and kicked up dust. In my ministry, I've learned to go to this passage a lot. I've taken a lot of verbal abuse in my career. You just have to understand that that's the way things are, and you trust God to deal with it. So this is what Job had to learn. And so that's Job is done at the end of chapter 31. And we come, and the three friends are done too. They're done. And we come to Elihu. And Elihu, we have no idea where he's been and what, how he shows up, but he shows up. Job chapter 32. I don't know, why don't we read down to verse 9, Judy?
So these three men ceased answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Then the wrath of Elihu, the son of Barachiah, the Bezite of the family of Ram, was aroused against Job. His wrath was aroused because he justified himself rather than God. Also against his three friends, his wrath was aroused because they had found no answer and yet had condemned Job. Now because they were years older than he, Elihu had waited to speak to Job. When Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, his wrath was aroused. So Elihu, the son of Barachiah and the Bezite, answered and said, I am young in years, and you're very old. Therefore I was afraid and dared not to declare my opinion to you. I said age should speak, and multitude of years should teach wisdom. But there is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. Great men are not always wise, nor do the aged always understand justice.
Okay, now, we have no idea how long this young man's been there. We have no idea when he showed up, why he showed up. He's never mentioned until here. But apparently, he heard enough of the discussion that he was, first of all, angry at Job. Now, why was he angry at Job?
Because he was righteous in his own eyes.
And that's exactly what Judy said 2 weeks ago, okay? He's righteous in his own eyes. And not only was he righteous in his own eyes, but he did not justify God. He justified himself. Everybody who's never justified themselves, raise their hands. Never justified yourself?
Oh, I'm sure I have. I'm sure. I was writing and trying to hear at the same time.
I understand. Okay? All right? It's not
just
for us.
You did it, right?
Yes. It's not for us to do that.
You're justifying yourself now, right?
Exactly.
All right? We profess to be Christians. We profess to live and to walk by faith. This is our profession. This is what we claim. What does Paul say in Romans? God justifies us. We don't have to justify ourselves. It's his business. It's not mine. It's his. And not only is Job an object of Elihu's wrath. Who else is an object of Elihu's wrath?
The three friends.
Yeah, the three friends. And why was his anger aroused against them?
Because they were aged, they should know better.
They found no answer.
And they had no answer, and they condemned Job anyway. All right? So the three friends set themselves up as judge, jury, and hangman. And Elihu was incensed. But Elihu was reticent to get involved, as somebody said, because he was not old. These are three elderly men, and so he understands that he needs to understand that usually, as the scripture says, gray hair has wisdom, which is why Paul in Timothy writes that he shouldn't let the fact that he's a young man be an impediment. Right? Timothy was a young man, and Paul gave him things to do. And Paul acknowledged that, yeah, you're young, but don't let it bother you. So Elihu comes along, and he, in his first paragraph, he spends some time excusing himself in terms of why he waited. What else does he do here? He says, I'm a young man and you are old, therefore I was afraid. But then he goes on. What does he do?
If you're older, you should know more or wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah, you should know better. I met a young man yesterday, and he was, I didn't know how old he was. He acted like a 13 or 14-year-old, and during the event, he hung around with a young man that I knew was 14. Near the end of the event, I found out that this young man was not 14 or 13. He was 22. And I thought to myself, why haven't you grown up? Why haven't you grown up? And I'm not the only one who made that judgment. There are other people that, and I thought, whoa, what's going on here? Well, Elihu is making a similar accusation to these older men. He says, age should speak and multitude of years should teach wisdom. And then he goes on and speaks about the Almighty. There is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. Understanding comes from God. Okay? Understanding comes from God. And great men are not always wise. I can name you a few. Alexander was a great man, right? But he wasn't wise. When he hit to India or wherever he ended up, what did he do? He got drunk. Wise men don't get drunk. Alexander the Great was a good, great man, supposedly, but he wasn't wise. And it cost him his life. He died. Okay? So great men are not always wise, nor do the age show and always understand justice. Justice and understanding are all rooted in the Almighty, all, always. So now he's going to approach these four older men, Job and his three friends, and he's going to speak. And he thinks he has something to say. And before we get too much further, you need to understand that Elihu is the last speaker before God speaks. Okay? So this is the last one to speak. And then God is going to have his say. So Job is finished speaking. Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar are they're done speaking. So now we're going to listen to Elihu for 4-5 chapters or so. And he's going to have something to say to everybody. So, he beginning with verse 10, and why don't you read down to verse 14 there, Nathan?
Therefore I say, listen to me, I also will declare my opinion. Indeed, I waited for your words. I listened to your reasonings while you searched out what to say. I paid close attention to you, and surely not one of you convinced Job or answered his words, lest you say, we have found wisdom. God will vanquish him, not man. Now he has not directed his words against me, so I will not answer him with your words.
Okay, so now he's evaluated the three men. And notice in verse 19, he first of all makes, as it were, a command, and then he tells you what he's going to do. What's he going to do?
Declare his opinion.
Okay, remember, I'm going to declare my opinion. Okay? So this is his view of it. It's not necessarily true. It's not necessarily false. It's one man's opinion. And his opinion is based upon what he has listened to. Notice in verse 11, what did he wait for? What was he searching for?
Words.
Words. Okay? And when he listened and waited for words in verse 12, he paid close attention. He paid close attention. I'm sure you've all sat in a classroom, and I'm certain that when you sat in a classroom, the teacher would teach something, and when you all left, the teacher thought to himself, I wonder whether anybody learned anything. Okay? I mean, I was at Cambridge High School. I was supposedly a substitute teacher, and I was teaching geometry. And there was a group of guys in the back of the room playing craps. There was another guy over here, another group of girls over here. They were talking about makeup and going to a dance, and somebody was over here doing something else. And I'm a substitute teacher. And in Cambridge High School, there is no discipline. The only sin in Cambridge High School was getting caught. No, there was no other sin, nothing. Getting caught was the sin. So I was supposed to teach geometry to this class. Oh, and there was another group of guys talking how they wanted to go to Amsterdam because Amsterdam was a wonderful city. You could get drugs anytime you wanted. And so this was the classroom. And so I taught the lesson. I drew things on the board, you know, angles and all this, and talked about, and the class is all done, the bell rings, and they all get up, and they all leave. And I sit there and I go, and what was I doing? So anyway, none of them paid close attention. None of them. Now, Elihu is saying that I did. I paid close attention.
I have a question to ask you about him.
Sure.
What if, because he was so young, I'm just asking, what if?
Yeah.
Because he was so young and because of Eastern culture that the young keep their mouth shut, what if he was there from the beginning, he just wasn't mentioned?
That's perfectly possible, okay? And but, you know, the three friends, they came from afar, mm-hmm. All right? Elihu, maybe he was a neighbor. I mean, we don't know. We know nothing about him except his genealogy. Now, usually the genealogy is given in the scriptures so that we know how people are tied into the people of God, the Israelites.
So he was a Benjamite, so how is he tied in with
God? No. This man, Elihu's not a Benjaminite. We don't know who he is. Israel's not
Buzzite.
A nation. Okay?
Benzite.
He's a Buzzite.
What is that?
We don't know. Okay? We don't know. But we are told that he's the son of Barachel, the Buzzite, the family of Ram. So we know three things about his genealogy. Ram, the name, shows up in the genealogy of the sons of Noah. All right? So what we can assume, whether it's actual or not, but we can assume that this young man is a descendant of Noah through that line. Okay? That's the only thing we've got. And you're correct. He could be there from the very beginning. He could have heard the whole scenario. And he may have known Job before the great debacle. He may have been a friend of the family or a friend of one of his sons. I mean, we know nothing except what we're told here.
It almost sounds like that when he starts off by accusing his three friends of not even condemning him.
Right.
He seems to have been there for all the
whole conversation. Yeah. He seems to have been there the whole time. And you have to commend him. You have to commend him. He listened to the whole conversation before he said anything. He waited till everybody else was done. And then he acknowledges his youth. He acknowledges that I'm doing this and I'm fearful, but I've got something to say. And yeah, contrary to our culture, okay, contrary to our current culture is run by the kids, the children.
I would think also that he would have been over 30.
Probably.
Because they weren't considered men
right.
until they were over 30.
Yeah. But and in Israel, the priests did not begin to do their job till they were 30, which is why, again, in the Gospel of Luke, when we're told that Jesus begins his ministry, we're told that he's about 30 years old, and then you get his genealogy through Mary, going back to Adam. That's in Luke 3. So all of that's possible, but again, we're not told.
I'm just trying to get a picture, and this
yeah.
is kind of the picture that I'm seeing, because I don't think he just all of a sudden appeared, in my opinion.
No, but in the text,
right.
he already suddenly appears.
Yes.
And since you asked, I happen to believe that he's about the same age as some of Job's children.
Could have been.
Okay? Because I don't believe that Job's children were married. They're not mentioned. He has no grandchildren. They're all children. And when he loses everything, he loses everybody in his family but his wife. Okay, and his wife says, curse God and die. I mean, what a woman. Anyway, so we can just deal with what we're given. But since you asked, Ram is a name that shows up in the genealogies of Noah. So, maybe. Okay, maybe. Which also might give us a clue about where Job lived, because we're told in Genesis chapter 10, the Table of Nations, you know, these people went there, these people went there. We have what's called the Table of Nations. And it's according to the sons of Noah, you know, sons of Japheth went here, sons of Ham, you know. And so that may be something to look into. But he's very conscious of the fact that he's young, but he's also very conscious of the fact that I listened. And I listened and I have something to say. I have something to say to you, 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 and you. and he's going to have a say.
I just thought it was important to mention that because he wasn't a young kid just spouting off.
Oh, no. No, no, not at all. No. I if he were just a young man, he would not be bold enough to do this. He had to be old enough, okay, to be to be in the community, okay. When you're there's a certain age that you're welcome in the community. For instance, the Jews have a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah, but that was only acknowledging their children as they were becoming adults. But again, if you're serving as a rabbi or a priest, you had to be 30. And Jesus, he's the carpenter's son, which meant probably he apprenticed to his dad until he was 30. Probably. And that would be typical. Again, nothing said. We don't know anything about Jesus' life between birth and ministry, except the window at age, 12? But if we look at Jewish culture, he is probably his father's apprentice. So, if you want to know a little, who knows whether it's true or not, but according to legend, there were tables and chairs made by Jesus that were still around in the second century. Whether it's true or not, but who knows? But that is a tale that has been told. So, yeah. Yes, so this young man is has some things on his mind, and he listened, and noticed that he listened well. And what did he listen to? He didn't listen to words. What did he listen to in verse 11?
Reasonings.
And in listening to reasons, he acknowledged that they were searching out what to say. Okay? So he listened well enough to understand that each of them were searching out what to say because nobody understood what was going on. Okay, whatever happened, you know, we're trying to make sense of, and we don't really know what happened, and so we're going to make some guesses. Reasonings. And then he goes on, and he says, I paid close attention. And then he makes two comments about Job. None of them, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, none of them convinced Job. And according to Elihu, none of them could answer his words. So this is Elihu's witness. None of them could convince Job, and they didn't answer Job. So now he's going to make a comment. Okay, in verse 13 and 14, what does he say about wisdom?
It sounds like it's God's choice.
Yeah, he's telling them, lest you say, in other words, you can't say this, we have found wisdom. None of them found wisdom. And the next thing he says is, God will vanquish him, not man. God is the one who's going to deal with Job. Okay? God's the one who's going to deal with Job. And man isn't going to deal with Job. And then he makes a comment about, okay, Job hasn't directed his words against me, so I will not answer him with your words. Okay, you've already had your discussion. Now I'm going to go another direction. I'm going to go another direction here. So this young man is taking on a task. Okay, his task is bold, and his task is arduous. He's dealing with four different people, but three of them are all aligned over here, and one's aligned over here, and Elihu is attacking all of them. So Elihu has put them all kind of over here, and Elihu is going to go with this discussion. You've got to remember, Elihu's angry with all of them. Okay?
And he's not going to use their arguments against them.
No. So he's going to, and... Okay, and he's also acknowledged that if there needs to be discipline or vanquishing, God's going to do that. Okay, so Elihu is not setting himself up as judge, jury, and hangman. Okay, he's not doing that, which is what the three friends did. So then we come to verse 15. Why don't we do 15 through 18, Rhianne?
They are dismayed and answer no more. Words escape them. And I have waited because they did not speak, because they stood still and answered no more. I also will answer my part. I too will declare my opinion, for I am full of words. The spirit within me compels me.
All right, let's start with verse 18. I'm full of words. I don't know about you, but if I sat and listened to an argument like this or a discussion like this for a period of time, I'd probably be full of words too. And he then comes and says again, I too will declare my opinion. Okay, once again, he's not asserting he's going to say the truth. He's going to give his opinion. Okay, he's going to express himself. And again, you read these chapters that he speaks, and that's what you're left with. You're not left with any analysis of his speech. Nobody comes along and tells you what they think. And after Elihu is done, the next speaker is God. And God addresses Job. Okay? When God begins to speak, this is what he says. Then the Lord answered Job. He doesn't answer Elihu, Zophar, Bildad, or Eliphaz. He answers Job. So, Elihu's speech, as it were, stands on its own. And we need to understand from the very beginning, this is the young man's opinion. Okay, it's his opinion. So, here we go. They are dismayed and answer no more. Words escape them. That's his analysis of the three friends. I've waited because they did not speak, because they stood still and answered no more. Well, this chapter begins with, these three men ceased answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. So they stop because Job's self-righteousness. Okay, that's why they stop. Okay? It's a little bit like, have you ever talked to somebody and you're having a discussion and eventually you realize this is going nowhere? All right? Well, that's what this was. They're going nowhere. Okay? We're not getting anywhere. So they stopped. So Elihu continues. I also will answer my part. I too will declare my opinion. So everybody else has had their shot, okay? Now Elihu is going to take his shot. And he's not going to use anybody else's arguments. He's not going to use anybody else's words. It's all Elihu. And he's full of words. Full of them. And the spirit within me compels me. Have you ever been there where you felt like you just had to say something? Okay? Yeah. Well, the problem with Elihu's, I just had to say something, it goes on for a long time. Okay. I just have to speak. So, Alice, why don't you read to the end of the chapter?
Okay. Indeed, my belly is like wine that has no vent. It is ready to burst like new wineskins. I will speak that I may find relief. I must open my lips and answer. Let me not, I pray, show partiality to anyone, nor let me flatter any man, for I do not know how to flatter, else my maker would soon take me away.
Okay, so he's telling you his motive. He's telling you why he feels compelled. He feels compelled, why? His belly is like wine that has no vent. And it's like a new wineskin ready to burst. He's got a lot on his mind. And he's going to speak so that he may have relief. After you read all of the rest of this, you might think that he was really uptight. You know, I'm going to speak so that I may find relief. And he's going to open his lips and answer. He's going to answer everybody. Okay? And he's going to show no partiality. They're all going to get it. And he's not going to flatter. When somebody opens their mouth and they flatter somebody, why do people flatter other people? What's the motive, usually?
They want something.
Say it again?
They want something.
They want something, yep. And Elihu isn't going to take sides. He's going to direct whatever he has to everybody. And then he says, I don't know how to flatter. There are days when I wish that maybe I'd kept my mouth shut before I told what was on my mind. It might have been better to flatter, but anyway. When somebody asks me what I think, I usually tell them. One lady came up to me. She was an elderly woman, and she wanted to know, how do I look? And I said, I don't think you want me to tell you.
If you can't handle the answer, don't ask the question.
That's what he keeps saying to me.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can't say something nice, don't say anything
at all. And that's
what
my wife said.
Yes.
Constantly.
And I said that to my kids all the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you just hit me over the head.
Yeah, no, I do.
But anyway.
Well, you had your chance.
This dear elderly woman, I shouldn't have said that because it only...
She felt sad.
No. She kept more anxious. Well, no, I really want... And the more I demurred, the more she wanted to hear. And I said, okay. So I told her.
The thought that comes to mind here is if you're full of gas, don't release it in public.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Anyway. But notice that when he says, I do not know how to flatter, notice he goes back to his maker. Else my maker would soon take me away. Flattery is not the truth. And we are to speak the truth in love. We are not to flatter. We are not to deceive. We are to speak the truth. And sadly, sometimes the truth hurts. And somehow or another, we need to learn how to demonstrate God's love, even though we're in the process of hurting somebody. So Elihu spends this chapter and explaining why he's opening his mouth, what he's going to do when he opens his mouth, and then he's going to enter into his argument or his speech in chapter 33.
Now, if he were younger than the other three, I have to admire his patience by keeping his mouth shut until this point.
Yeah, and that's why...
Usually when you're younger, you just...
butt in.
Yeah.
But, and that's why when this chapter starts, okay, those three men ceased, okay, they quit talking. Why? Because Job was self-righteous. Okay? We're not getting anywhere. No. And if you read the, if you read what we've already read, the they're on the same track all the time. Okay, you sinned, you sinned, you sinned, you sinned. Okay, you failed God. You did this, this. And Joseph, I mean, Job goes, no, no, I didn't do that. And so that's the substance of the argument up to that now. And Elihu is going to come in, and that argument is going to weigh from his, here's my opinion. And so the words of Job were ended at the end of chapter 31, and the three friends didn't have anything else to say. And so with everybody having had their say, Elihu now says, here's my opinion.
And we get about four chapters of the opinion.
Four or five.
Yeah.
Chapter 38 is where God begins to speak. Okay. The rest of the 34, 35, 33, 34, 35, 36, or 7 is Elihu. And God speaks at chapter 38. And I wish every single person who thinks they're a scientist, who thinks they know something about origins of the earth, mm-hmm. I wish they would read chapters 38, 39, and 40. I just, the arrogance of man in terms of some of this stuff, just I find astounding. It's flat out arrogance. So, since we had the introduction, why don't we stop there? Next week we'll pick up chapter 33 and enter into Elihu's discussion. Nathan, would you close?
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day you've given us to worship you and your word. We ask that we can understand it, meditate it, upon it, and deliver to the world, Lord, and make disciples, Lord. We ask that keep us safe and stay focused on you throughout this world that we live in, Lord, with all the evil that's in it. Thank you for your son, Jesus. Just pray to save you, pray.
Amen.